Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this unnaturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things! Treat others how you want to be treated, mate!
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we? No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my feels. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time. Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show. Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood. In my teen years and watching full episodes of Bluey. Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude. Huh. You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Cocomelon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day I sat down, put on the first episode, and... I watched all 141 episodes. Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus! Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan, we're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds. So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular. Because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing, so it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Cocomelon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4-year-old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals, they call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Honor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen... ever. There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is, like, the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out. Bingo was sad that Dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
"Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly."
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her. Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed, one of them said, "You didn't get to see the ladybug," I would say, "That's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night." In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, "Well, where was the last place you had it?" The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backward storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into the show, and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer, because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, "This show teaches you how to be a good parent," because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, the show is depicting perfect parents. It's well written and wholesome. Anyone, regardless of having kids, can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the fuck was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great." I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode. People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No, that episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Coco Melon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen. I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatpak. The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Chili set out to build a new swing for their porch. And we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying, I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog. Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents. Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs. What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on. The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww,
we made them.
The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older, as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold, which represents her death, and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing, and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end, saying, "Ah, this is heaven. Are you joshing me right now?" This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kid show with 8-minute long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. Caillou, it's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks! His brattiness isn't even important to the plot, it comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, "Gilbert, look what you did!" He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to go away! And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of shit. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching, piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punk sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, "Caillou, what did you do to your sister?"
"I made her look pretty, Mommy."
"Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup. How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things? Come here, you little twit."
Mommy, why are you hitting me?
Getting a spanking.
Mommy, you're hurting me.
I've had enough of you, Caillou. I hate you.
That kid got what was coming to him. I don't know. Maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping, Bandit getting hit in the groin, Bandit saying the word groin, this hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina, that one's kinda weird, this pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains, Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there. Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney Plus. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode. I heard so much about it. I finally got to the last episode on Disney Plus and thought, oh, okay. They're saving the deepest one for last. Alright, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance. I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it? Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts.
Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this unnaturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things! Treat others how you want to be treated, mate!
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we? No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my feels. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time. Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show. Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood. In my teen years and watching full episodes of Bluey. Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude. Huh. You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Cocomelon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day I sat down, put on the first episode, and...
I watched all 141 episodes.
Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus! Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan, we're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds. So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular. Because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing, so it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Cocomelon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4-year-old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals, they call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Oh, nor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen ever. There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is like the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out. Bingo was sad that dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
"Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly."
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her. Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed, one of them said, "You didn't get to see the ladybug," I would say, "That's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night." In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, "Well, where was the last place you had it?" The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backwards storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into the show, and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer, because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, "This show teaches you how to be a good parent," because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, this show is depicting perfect parents, it's well written and wholesome, anyone regardless of having kids can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy, implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great." I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode. People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No, that episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Cocomelon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen. I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatpak. The The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Shilly set out to build a new swing for their porch, and we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying,
I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog.
Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents. Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs. What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on. The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww,
we made them.
The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold which represents her death and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end saying, "Ah, this is heaven." Are you joshing me right now? This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kid show with 8-minute long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. Caillou, it's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks! His brattiness isn't even important to the plot, it comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, "Gilbert, look what you did. He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to go away. And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of shit. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching, piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punks sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, "Caillou, what did you do to your sister?"
"I made her look pretty, Mommy."
"Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup. How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things? Come here, you little twit."
"Mommy, why are you hitting me?"
"Getting a spanking."
"Mommy, you're hurting me."
"I've had enough of you, Caillou. I hate you."
That kid got what was coming to him.
I don't know, maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping, Bandit getting hit in the groin, Bandit saying the word groin, this hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina, that one's kind of weird, this pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains, Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there. Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney Plus. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode, I heard so much about it, I finally got to the last episode on Disney Plus and thought, oh, okay, they're saving the deepest one for last. Alright, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance. I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it? Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts. Draw a picture right now. All right, you done? That sucks, right? I spent 2 hours on the face, I couldn't get the hands right, and when I compared my art to this other artist I found online who's younger than me, it makes me want to curb stomp this monstrosity so no one ever has to look at it again. Okay, now, think of a joke. Not one you've already heard before. I want you to think up a brand new, never been done before joke. Okay. You know how cats are, like, lazy? Maybe we could do a joke about a lazy cat and his owner is like, "Ah, stop being so lazy." That sucked too! Now imagine doing both of those things together. And then putting that artwork up for the entire world to leave their unfiltered, anonymous opinions. And on top of that, you also make virtually no money off of it. Who in their right mind would put themselves through that kind of torture? Well, dear viewer, I would like you all to meet Zachary. Zachary is a webcomic artist. He makes webcomics just so when you're scrolling through your timeline while taking your morning poo, you get a little chuckle to yourself. And then you keep on scrolling, forgetting about his existence entirely in mere seconds. I have a soft spot for funny webcomics. Not the super serious superhero ones or the Japanese ones. Wait, why is this part all pixely? Webcomics can be shared on any platform. In fact, a lot of webcomics get reposted without the artist's consent and with their names removed. Which is kind of weird that someone went through the effort of removing a watermark when they could have just, you know, not done anything and left it. I hope you all realize that behind every comic is an artist who just wanted to make you laugh and doodle something that day. I started reading webcomics at a very young age. Back then, we just called them comics. They were really the only books that I liked to read, and the only place you could read the hottest new comics was in the newspaper. Oh, sorry, I should clarify. A newspaper is a stack of gray paper that would be delivered to your house by a child riding a bike, and they would print 19 pages of useless information and have one page dedicated to the funnies. This is where the classics were born. You know the ones, the Calvin and Hobbes, the Garfields, the Far Sides. Some of these comics have made me laugh harder than any meme ever has. I just want to say that Calvin and Hobbes was an extremely creative comic. It was a comic about a rambunctious boy that had a giant predatory animal best friend. I mean, where else have you seen that before? By the way, if you ever see those Calvin peeing bumper stickers, those are unlicensed knockoffs and really go against everything Calvin and his creator, Bill Watterson, stood for. In fact, all Calvin and Hobbes merchandise is unlicensed because Bill Watterson never made merchandise. But I mean, aren't these crochet Hobbes dolls the coolest? So there was only enough space in the paper for about 20 comics. And last time I counted, there were way more than 20 comic creators. So if you wanted to get your silly little comic in the newspaper, you had some fierce competition. But now, anyone with a computer and enough dedication can create comics that get shared by millions of people. You don't even need a fancy drawing tablet or expensive painting software or even art skills in general. Webcomics and the internet and memes have been intertwined for decades. Many of your favorite meme formats are just edited webcomics. Now, in most cases, if someone took an artist's work, defaced it, and then re-uploaded it without credit, that'd be a bad thing. But memes are different, I guess. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I want you all to know that these artists have made other comics that are just as funny, and you should support their work and buy their books, and if you're going to make a webcomic edit, please just keep in the watermark. It's literally more work to take it out, and you're being an asshole. Some of you original gangsters may remember that I also used to be a webcomic artist. I posted my first webcomic in 2012, which was over 10 years. 10 years?! It's been that long? What the fuck? I'll be honest, my webcomics took a little while to get some traction. Let me explain something. All the comics I would read in the newspaper had distinguished characters with personalities. A lot of times, the punchline of a newspaper comic would only be funny because we knew the characters and their mannerisms. Garfield hates Mondays, so instead of him hating Friday the 13th, he hates Monday the 13th. That's a good one, Garfield. So I try to make a webcomic like that with my own little universe. I'm gonna be a little vulnerable for a minute. Let's talk about my OCs I made when I was a 16-year-old boy. There were three main brothers. Jake, who was a self-insert character. One time I dressed up as him for Halloween. Justin, the book-smart straight man. Straight man as in the character archetype, not the sexuality. Although if any of the brothers were gay, Justin would be the gay one. And Kevin, the laid-back older brother who did whatever he wanted because he's the oldest. Those three were the main boys. Jake, Justin, and Kevin. The three whitest names anyone's ever heard. Now, if you're an up-and-coming comedy webcomic artist, I would suggest not to do what I did. If you're just trying to make someone laugh, you don't need a whole cast of characters that have intricate relationships. Just tell your joke and leave. Or don't. It's your art, you can do whatever you want. Eventually, I wanted to rebrand myself. Instead of having distinguished, defined characters, I went with a very basic-looking character design that had absolutely no distinguishing features at all. And I settled on a design that looked like this. I mean, over time, I refined it. I originally posted my comics exclusively to Tumblr. It was just me and this other obscure webcomic about trolls. We were the two main ones, really. Now, if you're still an up-and-coming webcomic artist, then you should post your comics to every platform imaginable. I learned the importance of cross-platform promotion the not-so-easy way. One day, I got a Tumblr message from someone asking if they could post my comics to a small, unknown app called iFunny. And I said, sure. Then that guy would periodically send me messages like, dude, we are blowing up! Our comics keep getting featured! And I was like, our? Then I wake up to messages asking, hey, are you the one posting these to iFunny? And I said, no, but I gave the other guy permission to. You know he's impersonating you and starting beef with other artists, right? Hmm? It turned out that iFunny was my most popular social media account, and I didn't even have access to it. I eventually got the account back, and now people tell me that they loved reading my comics on iFunny back in the day, which wasn't even part of the plan originally. Webcomics have really impacted me and this channel. Some of my earliest online friends were other webcomic artists who I don't keep in touch with as much as I should. My bad, guys, I'm sorry. My username is based off my webcomic, my character design was made for my webcomic, and even my cannonball profile picture is from a panel in my webcomic. I really hope this video makes you appreciate the webcomics that you see on your timeline. I know you see them, they're everywhere. If you come across a comic you like, I want you to try and find the original artist's socials and browse their other comics they've created. I guarantee you'll find some banger comics that just didn't get the same amount of attention as the other ones. And who knows, you might just make a difference in someone's art career. You know, making a whole video about webcomics has made me miss my first love. A lot of times when I think of a joke, I have to wait 2 months to tell it, and at that point, I don't even know if it's funny anymore. But a webcomic can have same-day joke delivery. So this is how I'm officially announcing that I'm making webcomics again. I'll be posting them on my website and maybe Twitter if I'm still verified. There's already 6 brand new comics. Feel free to make any meme edits of them. I don't care. Also, be sure to check out this amazing reversible toasty plush. It's honestly my favorite thing. And up until April 10th, we're running Merch Madness, where you can possibly score a free VidCon ticket and meet up with me. You don't even need to buy anything to enter, so check out the description for more information. I'm super excited to be making comics again. It's how I started out my internet journey. I'm going to try and post at least 1 comic a week, so be on the lookout for those. Thank you all for watching and sticking through this end card. Y'all are the real ones. So originally I was going to make a video talking about Boy Scouts because I was a Boy Scout, but then as I was writing the script, I thought about all the fun things I did as a Cub Scout. So here we are. Cub Scouts is something you can do before you're old enough to be a Boy Scout. It's not required to do Cub Scouts to be a Boy Scout. It's just if you're up to it or if your parents signed you up, you can do it. Now you're already pretty young when you can start doing Boy Scouts. It's why it's called Boy Scouts, not Man Scouts. You can start doing Cub Scouts when you're 7. At what point does it just become babysitting in uniform? So all you people watching over the age of 7, let me tell you what you missed out on. Unlike Boy Scouts that wear a tan uniform, Cub Scouts wear a dark blue uniform. Now there are 4 ranks to the Cub Scouts. There were some requirements you had to do to go up the ranks, but if you went to the meetings every week, you'd be fine. You didn't have to do anything on your own time. And even if you did all the requirements in the rank, you still had to be in the rank for at least a year. So basically the ranks were based on your age. When you were 7 years old in first grade, you were a Tiger Scout. The second graders were the Wolf Scouts, the third graders were the Bear Scouts, and the fourth graders, aka the really cool ones because you're the oldest. Actually, before I tell you, just guess what the mascot for the 4th and final rank of Cub Scouts is. Leave your guesses in the comment box below. Just kidding, don't do that. I don't care. We have a tiger, a wolf, and a bear. That rhymed. What animal is cooler than all 3 of those? I'll tell you. Nothing. And that was the mascot.
There was no mascot.
Welcome to the real world, 4th graders! There's no such thing as cartoon anthropomorphic animals. So if you did guess anything in the comments, you were wrong. I told you not to guess. The 4th and final rank of Cub Scouts was called Weebelows. Weeb-a-lows. Very fitting name. It goes Tiger, Wolf, Bear, Weebelows? What kind of animal is that? Apparently it's supposed to stand for We Be Loyal Scouts, cause we talk like pirates. Don't worry, Cub Scouts, I'll make you a mascot for the Weebelows. Here, it's a made-up animal for a made-up word. Use it however you like. The Wikipedia page also talked about a bobcat badge, but I don't remember doing that, so that's whatever, it's not important. I can't even remember what we did as Cub Scouts. We would just meet at some person's house. I think it was one of the kids' moms, and she just had some activity for us to do outside, and we would just play. My mom told me that she was my scout leader for a year, but I don't remember that. I do remember we talked about bike safety, and I remember I fell off my bike a lot. I still got the award, though. Each rank had a handbook that said what activities you would do, and I looked on Google for pictures of the handbook, and I found these books with gritty, serious, tough covers, and I was shocked because the handbooks I grew up with had the mascots on them, and I liked it! The old books were cute and had pictures! You're not trying to get rid of the mascots, are you, Cub Scouts? I think it's funny that each mascot gets progressively unhealthier, which is why my Weebelow mascot looks the way it does. And I think I might be suppressing this memory, but every time we went up a rank, there would be this award ceremony thrown by the leaders, and I think we metaphorically drank the blood of the mascot. I mean, it was really just fruit juice, but...
Hello?
Hey, TJ.
Hey, James.
Do you remember Cub Scouts?
Yeah.
D-
Did we, whenever we went up the ranks, did we metaphorically drink the blood of the mascot?
I think that's just something our leaders did. Like, some leaders chose to do it and ours did, but I don't think everyone did it.
Oh, we had weird leaders.
Yeah, I guess we did.
Okay, bye, TJ. So another thing we did as Cub Scouts was go to this thing called Cub Scout Day Camp. I don't know if it was just an Arizona thing, but I hated it. Cub Scout Day Camp took camping and made it unfun. And surprisingly, even as a 7 and 8 year old, I loved camping. Really, Jane? Someone who sits in front of the computer all day drawing Pokemon? You like toughing it out and sleeping in the woods? Yes! Oh, yes! If you've never been camping, get on that! I'm talking about real camping, though, not this day camp. Cub Scout Day Camp was during the summer, an Arizona summer. And we would get up super early, like 8 o'clock, eat breakfast at home, and then you and your whole troop carpooled for about 2 hours to camp. There were a bunch of other Cub Scout troops that met there, too. It was a pretty big thing. You were supposed to pack your own lunch, and all the other boys had really cool lunches, like Lunchables and Go-Gurts and, ironically, Subway. I was jealous of kids with Subway sandwiches, and all my mom packed me was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on wheat bread. So before the day even starts, I'm already in a bad mood. You start the day sitting in this big auditorium, but it's outside. The leaders would tell you to drink lots of water, and they actually gave all the troops a bag of water balloons, and they wanted us to throw them at each other because that would keep us moist and not die of heat stroke. But water balloons are stupid because 90% of the time they don't even break on impact. You're just beating some poor kid to death with a bag of water. Then you would separate into your troop and there was a rotation of activities for you to do all day. We ate dinner and then we went back to the auditorium and some of the leaders put on a play. I mean, it was a pretty dumb play, but I was invested in the story. But then at 10 p.m., you went home. You didn't even get to sleep in a tent. Sleeping in a tent is one of the most fun things about camping. And also, the whole time, we didn't get a campfire because it's dangerous to have fire around 7 to 10 year olds or something. But they did let us do archery, because that's safe. Then the next day, you went back and you did it all over again. And then you would do it for a third day too. So 3 days of this. 3 days of people throwing water balloons at you, and you can't get them back because you have a weak throwing arm. And you're probably wondering, James, what's with all the complaining? This sounds like fun. I mean, sure, other kids probably had fun. I might have been a little dramatic as an 8-year-old. One time on the second day of camping, I was clumsy and I kept falling off the rocks that I was climbing on, and I kept getting all these scrapes and bruises and they really hurt. And then we went swimming, that was one of the activities, there was a swimming pool. But just being the little punk kid that I was like, no, I don't want to go swimming. So they made me sit off to the side and they said I couldn't swim. But then later I was like, I want to go swimming now. After you swam, the leaders told you to check your shoes for scorpions, and I remember I didn't check because I hated everyone. And you know the play the leaders put on at the end of the day? It was split up into 3 parts, 1 part for each day. So it was left on a cliffhanger. I wanted to go see it, but everyone else in the troop wanted to play with water balloons. And I never found out how the play ended! The next morning, when I was supposed to leave for the third day, I told my mom that I didn't want to go, and she had to tell the carpool that her son didn't want to go because he's a huge puss. And then afterwards, when they were handing out the awards, I didn't get a single award, because I didn't go the third day, so I didn't finish any of the activities. And then I never went back to Cub Scout Day Camp since, and that's why I hated it. You know how when people get into a new relationship, they go through a honeymoon phase? Well, me and my girlfriend went through a is the person I'm dating a deranged murderer phase. When she first came over to my house, she thought my Nintendo figure collection was something only a psychopath would have. And she's right. When you've been living alone for so long, sometimes you just need to buy friends and put them on display. And sometimes you do this by turning people into lampshades or chairs. Luckily, I just collect hunky reptile figures. Gif doesn't actually think I'm a psychopath anymore, which is good, you know, because I don't want anyone to know the truth. However, early on in our relationship, there were some things I did that she didn't like. Like one time I was unloading the dishwasher and I was putting away the knives and Gif looked at me all concerned and I asked, what's the matter, huh? Huh? I don't know what made her run to the other side of the room like that when I could clearly just throw the knife at her. Yeah, she's kind of stupid. But she definitely got her point across that she didn't like me holding multiple knives and told me to cut it out. But I didn't know if she was a psychopath either though, because there are definitely some things about her that made me question her sanity. Like how she owns a $2,000 animal mascot costume, but she hates sports. That's weird. One time when I was over at her apartment, I was looking through her freezer, assuming she had bagel bites, and I asked, hey babe, where's all the bagel bites? And there was this plastic grocery bag in there, and she tells me, no, don't look in there! We don't have any bagel bites, you ate them all, remember? But in my mind, all I'm thinking is, hold on,
What the frick does this chick have in her freezer that she doesn't want me to see? A freezer is not a place where you tell someone, don't look in there. You say that about underwear drawers and toilets. That's it. I don't know what we did for the next 10 minutes, because all I was thinking about was how many severed hands were in Gif's freezer. But then I thought, okay, maybe I'm overreacting. I optimistically asked, hey, babe, are you, perhaps keeping a surprise for me in the freezer? Like a birthday cake? My birthday's not for another 5 months, but that's the only thing I could think a person would hide in a freezer that wouldn't make them a psychopath. And she said, nope.
So what's in there?
Don't worry about it. Do you not see how this looks? If the doors weren't locked, I would have been out of there. I wasn't about to lose sleep over this, so I held up the knife I had from the previous joke and said, what's in the freezer? And she went, it's a dead snake. You had a dead snake next to the bagel bits! So fun fact about my gif, she owns 8 snakes. Mm-hmm. Apparently she used to own 9. I've learned that snakes are a very low-maintenance pet. You only have to feed them once every 3 years, and if you cut them in half, they turn into 2 snakes. Yeah, so I have no clue how one of her snakes could have died. And another fun fact, snakes lack the part of the brain that feels love. They're physically incapable of showing affection. So your pet Hognose would sell your soul to Snake Satan for 1 dead mouse. So she already has 8 pets that don't love her, and potentially her boyfriend too if she doesn't get rid of that freezer snake. At least my reptiles aren't dead in a freezer. I immediately start asking questions. Why do you have a dead snake in your freezer? How many other dead animals are in your freezer? What the heck's wrong with you? And she said, I wanted to get him taxidermied, but the person I wanted to have do it was busy. Also, there's dead rats in there for my snakes. Oh, that explains why the bagel bites tasted so funny. What's extremely gross is that the snake is still in there to this day. I don't know how long the snake was in there before, but it's been well over a year since that incident. It's honestly great, though, because now she can never complain about the state of my refrigerator. I'll have potatoes that are sprouting more potatoes, grapes that are getting me tipsy, and if she points any of it out, I just respond with, oh, you think my refrigerator's disgusting? Yeah, Medusa? Uh-huh. One time she said, ah, my fridge smells terrible and I don't know why. Really? You can't think of a single reason? She said, no, I said the fridge smells bad, not the freezer. I said, I will flush your snake down the toilet and give you a swirly. Now that's the sign of true love, kids. But for all I know, she could totally still have severed hands in there. After dealing with the snakesicle situation, there's some other things I've learned from being in a relationship. Apparently, there are rules and etiquettes when eating food, and my girlfriend sure does love and enforce those rules. I was taught, don't put your elbows on the table, close your mouth when you're chewing unless you want to talk to someone, and make sure you eat something green every once in a while. But according to her, there's more than that. Like, did you know that bagel bites aren't a part of a balanced diet? We were at a restaurant one time, pre-COVID, and when we got our food, Gif took a napkin and put it on her lap and told me to do that as well because you're supposed to do that in a society. I looked around the restaurant and said, but no one else has a napkin on their laps. And she said, that's because you wanted to eat at a Denny's. I didn't know why she was such a stickler for table manners until I went to her family's place for Thanksgiving and I stepped inside and saw 2 sets of staircases in their house. And it all made sense. Oh, they're fancy and collect staircases. Going to my girlfriend's home for Thanksgiving was the first time I met a partner's parents, and I tried really, really hard to get them to like me because I'm kissing their firstborn child. I'm in the house, dad's watching sports. I love sports, I lied. Mom's working on a puzzle. I love puzzles. They used to call me the puzzle king in high school. Her brother's playing Mario Odyssey. I love Mario. Oh, wait, I don't have to impress you. You suck at this game. In an effort to get them to like me more, I brought a gift for Gif's family. I got them a little baby cactus because it's small and prickly and doesn't like to be touched. Just like her. Ooh, ow, babe. No, no, babe. It was a joke. It was a joke, babe. What's that? Gif's Thanksgiving meal was the polar opposite of my family's Thanksgiving. My family does Thanksgiving with 2 other families, and they all come together with mashed potatoes, and everyone gets in a line with paper plates, and we all have 1 big mashed potato potluck. Then I sit at the kids' table to avoid talking about politics. Gif's family used real plates and had candles, and everyone puts a napkin on their lap. I felt like Shrek at Fiona's castle. They had 3 forks of various sizes, but I still wanted them to like me, so I wasn't about to point out that it made no sense to use 3 different forks to eat a meal. This must be why Gif is so afraid of knives. All these cutlery options are bringing up childhood traumas of going up all the stairs.
But Giff's family was so fancy that I actually didn't even meet them on Thanksgiving. My memory just filled in that we were having a Thanksgiving meal. Giff read this script and was like, you know you didn't meet them on Thanksgiving, right? That was just a regular Tuesday brunch. That wasn't even a meal to be thankful for? Why'd we talk about politics so much? One of the big political debates we have is that Giff tells me I wear dad socks. But I don't think she understands my genius. You see, if I buy and wear the same pair of socks for the rest of my life, I'll never have to worry about matching socks ever again. So I've already picked out the socks that I'm going to be wearing at my funeral. And as we were wrapping up our non-thankful meal, I got up from the table, and Giff's dad said, hey, I have those socks. So I guess she's right about some things. And her dad totally likes me now. In the end, as long as I make Giff happy, then I know her parents will like me, no matter what socks I wear. And as long as you're with someone who makes you a happier person, then they're a good partner too. Even if they refuse to throw away the dead snake they've had in their freezer for almost 3 years.
Hey, this is kind of like a part two video. I mean, you don't have to have seen the part one video to understand what I talk about in this video. But I mean, if you haven't watched part one, you should. So I used to work at Subway, and to be honest, about 80% of the customers were fine. Sometimes they would do something that would just personally annoy me, like ask for a meatball on flatbread. So don't feel too bad for me. Like sometimes people would ask me, can I have a turkey with lettuce, tomatoes? Whoa, slow down! What kind of bread? Foot long or 6 inch? What kind of cheese? Is it toasted? Then we'll talk about vegetables! And every time someone brought in a list, there would always be something missing on it. Always! I never had someone come in with a complete list. I would ask someone, what kind of cheese? And they would say, they didn't specify. Well then, if they didn't care enough to remember cheese, I guess they'll get Swiss. If anyone watching is currently working at a Subway, then feel free to use these tricks. If someone asked me,
what kind of cheese do you recommend?
I would always say provolone, because it's the easiest cheese to pull apart with gloves on. Really, if anyone asked me what I recommended, I would just tell them the easiest thing for me to do. But even after I gave my insightful provolone cheese recommendation, sometimes people would still say,
I'll take American.
Why do you even ask me what cheese I would recommend if you're not going to take it seriously? Another thing that would annoy me is when people would say the sandwich was all done, but they didn't put any sauce on it. So I would ask, any sauce? And then they would be like, oh yeah, mayonnaise. Oh, why did you tell me it was all done if it wasn't? Also, the receipt machine at the store took like 7 seconds to print out the receipt. So it would be very awkward every time I would ask people, do you want your receipt? And then they would say yes, and then we would just stare at each other until the receipt printed. So what I did every time someone swiped their credit card, I would just stare off into space, and in my head, I would count to 5. And then I would ask, do you want your receipt? And by the time they said yes, it was like magic. As soon as they said yes, the receipt printed. At Subway, you only work with one other person. So if someone got annoyed and said, let me talk to your manager, I would just look at them and go, listen, I've been here the longest. The only other person in this store is a 16-year-old girl, and she technically isn't old enough to use the toaster, so I'm probably your best bet. I'm the manager. Like, do people think the manager will automatically take their side and give them free stuff? Yes, actually they do think that, because it happens all the time. I would consider myself a pretty laid-back Subway employee. I didn't like to be stingy with people, even though I was disobeying the Subway formula on purpose. Oh, you want more than 6 olives on your foot long? Sure! Here, have a 5th slice of cheese. $1.50 for avocado? I'll charge you 75 cents, buddy. I probably shouldn't be saying these things. You know, in case this whole YouTube thing flops and I need a job. So I wasn't really strict on the rules. You know those fast food workers who are strict? No, we won't serve breakfast at 10:02. Get out! But being pretty laid back still didn't stop people from being annoying. So this one person comes in and asks for 2-foot-long pastrami sandwiches. And pastrami is our most expensive sandwich. It's about $10 for a foot long. And guys, the pastrami is super good. But I wouldn't pay for it. I mean, it's good, yeah, but I'm not paying $10 for a foot long. It's not worth it. So this guy, I make his 2 sandwiches, I ring him up, and I say, that'll be $20. And I guess he didn't look at the price of the sandwich on the menu, or he thought we still did the $5 foot longs, because he said to me, I ain't paying for that. And this is when I was just starting out. I only had like a week of experience. And after he said that, I responded, well, shoot. I guess you're not paying for it. I didn't know people could do that. Hey, I want this. Alright, that's $20. Nah, you don't want it? No, I want it. I'm just not paying for it. Okay, no, but actually, we did come up with a compromise. He told me that he had $12, so he ended up paying for one of the sandwiches,
and I got to eat the other one. So it all worked out. This one time I was making a sandwich for a guy with a very heavy accent, and he asks for onions on the side. No big deal. We at Subway put vegetables in little cups all the time. I actually got a soup cup because the on-the-side cups are teeny tiny, and I start doing my thing, but then he says, "No, on the side." And I think, oh, he's getting a foot long. He probably wants onions on half of it, but not the other. So I start putting onions on half the sub, but then again he says, "No, on the side." At this point, I don't know what this guy wants, so I ask him, "On the side of what?" And then he screams, "Onions!" And I never figured out what he was trying to say. This one old gentleman asks for sauce to be put on his vegetables, and normally we put it on top of the sandwich with the meat. And I didn't know if I heard him correctly, because I put the sauce on, and then I closed the sandwich. So your sauce would have been in the same place either way. One time, this woman tipped me and Corey $40. She wasn't annoying, I just want to sprinkle in some good customer stories. Okay, one time this Native American person came in, and I don't know if mentioning that was important to the story. He comes in and asks for 5-foot-long tunas. Okay, Tyler, just me and you, let's do this. And then when we're all finished, we ring him up and we say, "Anything else?" And he says, "7 meatballs." What? He wanted 7 more sandwiches. But James, you're Subway. You're supposed to make people sandwiches regardless of how many they ask for. Yeah, I know, but the guy could have handled it differently. Normally for a platter, you have to call in at least an hour ahead, and that's only 5-foot-longs. This guy could have called ahead and said, "Hey, I'm getting 12 sandwiches, so just prepare yourselves. Mentally." I mean, we had so many customers waiting in line. No, we didn't. That's a lie. It was only him. But still, this one woman, I was making her sandwich, and for vegetables, she asked for extra lettuce. So I put on a big handful, but then she asks for more. So I put more on, more, and sprinkle some on, more! I won't be able to close the sandwich with any more lettuce. And she says, "That's fine." All right, extra lettuce it is. So I ended up giving her an open sandwich with a mountain of lettuce. You know we do salads, right? When I was little, I always thought if I was working at a store and someone tried to rob me, I wouldn't give them any money. But now it's like, psh, I ain't risking my life for Subway. Here, take the cash register. So thankfully, I've never had anyone pull a gun on me, but I have caught people stealing from us. I was making someone's sandwich, and this one kid asks for just a water cup, so I gave it to him. So I go back to making a sandwich, and I just hear the fuzzy soda sounds being dispensed. And I look over, and the kid is putting soda in the cup. He didn't even try to hide it. When I put soda in a water cup, I at least wait for the employees to go in the back, but I didn't even say anything. I was just like, "All right, man." This guy, I totally saw him take a bag of chips, and he hid it under the counter so I couldn't see. So when I rang up his sandwich, I asked, "Anything else?" And he said, "Nope." Alright, whatever. Okay, last story. I was in the back and was playing some Clash of Clans, and we have a computer that shows what the cameras see, and I see this woman who was eating there. She reached over the counter and took 3 large cups, and I did nothing to stop it. You know, I'm the kind of person that's like, the fast food employee is always right. Say if I was eating somewhere, and I asked for a chicken salad, and they said, "We only have tuna salad." I'm the kind of person that's like, "Oh, well, I guess I'm having the tuna salad then."
Hello?
Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
Just wanted to give you a call and let you know that
puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So I just wanted to let you know that everything's going to be okay and
I love you.
You got the wrong number.
I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing, and everyone in my class had one, except for me. My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket, because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at internet stuff, which backfired horribly. So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. an LG Cosmos 2.
I didn't grow up in the 90s. Everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it. And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me thinking I was someone else and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway. That's right, another Subway story. Hashtag Subway 4. It wasn't good enough to be in the other three. So, it was 5 minutes until closing and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say, thank you for calling Subway. How may I help you? I was supposed to say, this is James. How may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name. Idiot. Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes. Is it all right if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas. Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something? No, he said. I just need gas. I was a little confused. Okay, yes. So you'll get gas, then are you gonna stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station. So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh.
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize, but my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma? Because why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not... You have the wrong number. And she goes, isn't this 416-295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416-293, because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, 3? I don't think I pressed 3. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416-293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed 3. So I don't know how she's talking to me right now, unless she did. So I said, well, obviously, you did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning, and I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, I've been awake for several hours voice. Hello?
You're going to have to come quickly! Timmy fell down to well, Vance!
What?
I said, you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down to well, Vance!
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said, I think you have the wrong number. Okay. Goodbye.
No, 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 got the phone. You gotta come quickly, because Timmy fell out.
Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought as I went back to sleep. But then immediately I got a call from the same number, and I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all, maybe there's something else going on, maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me.
All advantage, head of head of heart, advance!
Okay,
I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking, and I could actually understand her, and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kinda hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes, I am. And also, I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me, I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos, then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said, well, they must have given it to you wrong. Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then, she hung up on me! Like, this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. I'm just kidding on that last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that. I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school. Oh man. What is poetry? I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask a class, so how was everyone's weekend? Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died! Haha, yeah, they do that. But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, hey Susan, how was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time. Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher. Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they- Oh. Well, now I know where all the budget went. The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So, why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school? Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool though. We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to have to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today. Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch, so I can just do this during lunch. Ah, look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your 9th grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day. So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place? Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place? IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should. My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it. And surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin. You know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turn into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word the, but they did. What did they mean? Sometimes we would spend days analyzing a single poem, taking notes and talking about what we thought the poet meant. One time a poem we were reading had someone talking, so there were quotation marks at the start of the sentence, but there weren't quotation marks at the end. The poet forgot to put end quotes. I remember noticing it and thinking, "Aha! A clue! Mr. Poe, I just made a breaking discovery. There's no end quotes here, meaning that the whole rest of this poem is told by this character." And Mr. Poe said, "Oh no, that's just a typo." Well, frickin', why am I perfectly nitpicking this piece when the poet purposely put poor punctuation in his poems? Pterodactyl! This is gonna sound off topic, but do you guys know what lateral thinking puzzles are? Lateral thinking puzzles are sort of like riddles, but more stupid. You're given a strange situation with little information, and you have to ask the person who told you the puzzle yes or no questions to get the answer. My favorite lateral thinking puzzle is this, because it's so stupid. A man goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, eats one bite, and then jumps off a bridge. Why? Now, normally, if we were playing legitly, you would ask me yes or no questions like, was the man in a relationship? And I would answer them saying, well, not anymore. The explanation is this. I'm not going to read it out because it's super long and complicated, but you can read it if you want. Well, Mr. Poe also liked to tell these lateral thinking puzzles, but his solutions were more dumber. One of the puzzles he told the class was, you're trapped in a restaurant. How do you get out? Now, I can think of like 5 solutions right off the top of my head. Okay, through the door, through a window, use a crowbar if it's locked. There's probably a sharp knife to cut through a wall, or you can dig a hole under everything with a spoon. But it was actually none of those answers. So, how do you get out of a restaurant you're trapped in? You get an education. Okay, let me explain. You're trapped in a restaurant because you're a waiter. That's your job. And to get out of the restaurant, you need to get a good education so you can get a better job. Kind of like how I was able to quit my job in the food industry by getting an education. It's funny because he dropped out of college. So the class got the answer to that riddle, but Mr. Poe told us another riddle and we never figured that one out. And that riddle is, anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... blank. Given that the answer to the first riddle was education, the answer to this could be anything. I really wanted to know the answer to this riddle, so I googled it hoping that Mr. Poe just stole it from the internet, and I found this song, "Anyone can dig a hole close enough to a ditch, but it takes a real man to call it home," which sounds poetic enough. Let's see if the song gives us any more clues. Mr. Poe, I didn't know you were into this sort of stuff. So I wish I could give you the answer, but I don't have one. Feel free to guess what you think the answer is and give your reasoning in the comments. That'll be fun to read. But I will say the answer that I did come up with that I think makes the most sense. Anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to hide the body. And publish. A 23-minute long movie review about an 80s puppet movie sure is different than the content I usually post. And even though it was a lot of work, it was fun to try something new, and I think the video turned out pretty good. Am I right, Chamberlain Funko Pop? Well, it's a good thing I'll never, ever have to worry about this franchise ever again. Are you sure about that? When I made a review about a cult classic puppet movie that came out 35 years ago, the last thing I was expecting was that said franchise would get a reboot announced 2 weeks after I posted. And every single day since then, people have been tweeting at me saying, "Hey James, did you know Netflix is making a Dark Crystal series?" Yes, I know. Do you know who you're talking to? If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, then I recommend you watch my video, The Movie That Was Too Scary for Baby James. In that video, I reviewed a scary kids movie called The Dark Crystal. The movie was more or less a passion project of Jim Henson, the creator of The Muppets, and so this movie was done entirely with puppets. It came out before I was born, but I still somehow watched it and got scarred for life. In my review, I said some good things about the movie, like I thought it was a very creative and artistic film, but I, also said some negative things about it, too. As YouTubers, sometimes we forget that our videos are public and can be viewed by anyone. And when we talk about companies, we can forget that real people are attached to those properties who have poured hundreds of hours into these projects, and there's a chance they'll see our videos. And unbeknownst to me, Lisa Henson, current CEO of the Henson Company, saw my video. And for some reason, I never considered that was ever going to happen. If I had known that Lisa frickin' Henson was gonna watch my video, I probably would have worded a few things differently. I don't think she was too mad at my video, though, because she invited me to tour the Henson office, and I got to see a real-life Skeksis puppet, which resurfaced an unhealthy amount of repressed memories, and I got to meet some of the puppeteers, which was a whole lot of fun. Also, before Age of Resistance was released, I got contacted by Netflix, and they invited me and some other Dark Crystal fans to an early screening of the first two episodes, and I signed a non-disclosure agreement so I couldn't spoil anything. I don't remember when that NDA said I was allowed to talk about it again, but hopefully I'm in the clear. When I was in the early screening, I just remember thinking about how cool that these characters in this world were back on the big screen. Netflix has a pretty big screen. And the puppetry and cinematography have only gotten better. And the fact that 95% of everything was done with practical effects and puppets, it's beautiful! There's not a single human in this series, except in episode 10 when this puppeteer's head can be seen for a couple frames. I just checked and they actually took it out, so I still saw it. So much time and care and hard work was put into this series that there was a documentary made about how hard it was to make this series. If any of you are wondering, no, Reunip does not make an appearance in Age of Resistance, nor is there a naked baby Jen puppet. Also, if you're worried that the show wasn't going to be as dark and scary as the original, don't worry. It's darker and scarier than the original. The Netflix family Twitter account was nice enough to timestamp every scary part in the series, and as you can see, stuff goes down in episode 10. Surprisingly, though, they didn't blacklist the scene of the Skeksis peeing out of three different pee streams in episode 6 at 28 minutes and 41 seconds. Really makes you think. So, artistically, this series is beautiful, and it needs to do well because it's left open for a season 2, and I want a season 2 to get greenlit. I'm not going to do a plot summary of the whole thing like I did in the first review because I don't want this video to be an hour long, and you should watch it for yourself. I'm not just going to do everything for you, I'm not your mom. But there are some things you should know before you go watching the series. This is kinda spoilery, but I won't spoil that much. So this alien planet is home to these creatures called Gelflings. They can share memories with each other by holding hands, and the girl Gelflings have wings. There's also this other creature called Agura, who's been around since the beginning of the world. She's basically Yoda's sassy grandma. And then out of nowhere, these tree aliens visit. Stay with me here. And they crack this very important crystal, and in doing so, they split into two different creatures. Their goodness becomes this thing called a mystic, who are dumb, and their bad side become these cool bird monsters called Skeksis, and then the Skeksis took over the entire world, so whoops. None of this is explained in the original movie, and it's not explained in the series until episode 7, but I think that the tree alien backstory should have started the series, which is why I just spoiled it for you. The original 90-minute film already had so much lore, and this new Netflix reboot just added even more lore? There's even a character named Lore? How much lore is there? Speaking of names, there are a lot of made-up words in this series, and sometimes those made-up words are hard to remember. Within the first minute of Age of Resistance, the narrator tells us that there are seven clans of Gelflings, but then only names three, because there are only three important ones that we should care about. I don't even know the names of the other four clans, and I'm like a Dark Crystal aficionado. Also, there are like 10 evil bird monsters, all with names like Skexo, Skexil, Skektek, and Shrek. Granted, most of the time they go by their more common names like Chamberlain or the Emperor, but gosh dang it, I can't even remember some of those names. That's the pussy one, and that's the one that made that weird face in the original movie, and that's the one whose voice does not sound like a Skeksis at all.
Now, what vexes you? Child.
Another thing you should know is that I thought this series was pretty slow. Maybe it's because I'm impatient or I'm used to watching YouTube videos at 2x speeds exclusively, but do you remember in the original movie how there was a scene where the Skeksis ate dinner for 2 whole minutes? And visually it was amazing, but the whole time you're thinking, yeah, I get it. Well, there are a lot of scenes like that in the series. Let's take the beginning of episode 2, for example. It starts with a character we've never seen before, waking up and putting on his shoes and making porridge and then spilling the porridge on his shirt and brushing his hair, then roughing it up, then grabbing his cleaning supplies. And it's just a whole minute of this unnamed character getting ready for his day. It's just so poor. Just cut it, please. And it wouldn't be that bad if this was the only example, but trust me, there are plenty of examples. I just don't want to spoil any of them for you. Turning a 90-minute movie into a 9-hour TV series, you're going to have some filler or some scenes that don't necessarily drive the plot forward. I get that. Luckily, I found this Chrome plugin that lets you watch Netflix at 2x speed, so
it's all good.
Making this video has got me thinking about prequels and how tricky they are to do right. In the original movie, there are only 2 Gelflings left in the entire world, so a prequel that sets up a world with 7 different Gelfling clans, we as an audience know that something's gonna happen, and it ain't gonna look good for the Gelfling. The series also added this MacGuffin Halo sword-looking thing that was supposed to save the world, but the whole time watching that, I kept thinking, no, that's not how the world is saved. The world's not saved until 1982. Also, there are certain characters that we know can't die because they're in the original movie, but boy does this show make you think some OG characters are gonna die. It almost makes me wish that the writers used the 80s Dark Crystal movie as inspiration and rebooted the series in its own separate universe. Movie reviewers tend to focus a lot on the negatives, and I don't want to come off as a hater because I really did enjoy this series and I want a season 2 to get made, so let's end this video with some of the things I liked about this series. I like that we got to see the Skeksis with more personality because they were always so over-the-top evil. The Hunter Skeksis was just on a whole new level of cool. All the other Skeksis never came across as threatening. Like look how slow they walk. I could beat them up. But the Hunter Skeksis, oh man, he was awesome. Do you think he'll be my friend? I like that the series didn't tone down the darkness, and if anything, they amplified it, because everyone like me should have a deep-seated fear of puppets. There are some great nods to the original Dark Crystal, like when the Emperor Skeksis says,
I will never be dust!
But we all know that's the very first thing he does in the original movie. Celadon is a piece of garbage and does not deserve a redemption arc. The voice acting is amazing. There are a lot of talented people voicing these characters, like Luke Skywalker. A YouTuber named Barnaby Dixon, who made these very cool mantis finger puppets, got to work on a scene where the puppets put on a mini puppet show. And that was everything I liked about Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. So, in conclusion, if you have 9 hours of free time, download the Video Speed Controller plugin, set that bad boy to 2, and save yourself 4.5 hours. But do watch Age of Resistance. Also, executives, if you still need someone to play Rayunip, hello. Hey.
I don't know if any of you guys had to do this in high school, but in my high school, you had to take a physical education credit to graduate. So normally, to get it out of the way, in 9th grade, all the boys would take PE, and all the girls would take dance. But sometimes, the really white boys would take dance, and you could always point them out during dance recitals. So I actually took PE my sophomore year because I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade. But that was okay, because I fit in quite perfectly with all the other skinny white boys. And there's like this long moment in the first 10 minutes of class where all you do is sit in the locker room and wait until coach says, okay, let's do this! So one day we all got bored and just started flicking water bottle caps, you know, just the caps and the little whoop-ah! We just started flicking, you know, like little tiny frisbees. We took caps from the trash and we would just whoop-poo! Shoot them at each other, you know? Whoop-ah! And it was all fun, you know, and no one really got hurt, and I'm pretty sure I'm the one who started it, but whatever. And then, when we did our physical education class, it was, like, extra hard. Like, we ran 2 laps instead of 1. And we had to do wall sits while holding medicine balls. And then afterwards, when we were all sweaty and tired, the teacher goes, You want to know why today was extra hard? It's because you're flicking water bottle caps at each other.
What?
Fast forward a couple, I don't know, a month, and these two kids get the idea to play a game called Bodies. And if you aren't familiar with that game, it's a game where you punch someone, that's it. You're not allowed to hit their face, though, just their bodies. Which is why it's called Bodies. And you'd think at least one of us would be like, hey, you guys. Oh, wait, their voices should be squeaky.
Hey, you guys. Coach didn't like that we were throwing water bottle caps before. Maybe we shouldn't do this.
So, you know, I obviously couldn't let that happen without watching. And these two kids start playing, and one kid isn't even punching back, which is a strategy I would not use playing that particular game. And then all of a sudden, the dude taking the punches falls off his feet and hits his head on the hard tile and doesn't get up.
Did I win?
So we're a couple of young bros, and we're like, hey, bro. 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 So we had to tell the teacher, and the teacher got the nurse. And a little time passed, and at that point, he did wake up a little. And the coach asked him what happened. And he knew he would get in trouble if he told the truth. So he lied and said,
I don't know, I just passed out and got all these punch marks.
Although it is possible he could have legitimately forgot. And then the coach asked the class what happened. And everyone was like, oh yeah, geez man, yeah, he just passed out. Yeah, I saw him. He just flopped down. And we almost got away with it. Except one kid, I forget his first name, but his last name was like for Wilkins or something. Ugh, and he had the stupidest bowl cut too. Ow, so stupid. He tells the coach, they were playing Bodies. And person A falcon punched person B. And then we already know we're in a whole heck of a trouble. But the nurse called the PE teacher and said, and this kid needs to get his stuff. And coach said to the class, someone needs to get this kid his stuff. I got it! I'll get his stuff. And I'm told that the class had to do lunges down the track field. But I wouldn't know, because I took my sweet time getting him his stuff. And then a year later, I heard our PE teacher got fired. For separate reasons.
To tell you this story, I need to introduce to you a new character in my life. I try to keep some parts of my life private and off YouTube, but this story wouldn't make sense if I called this person a friend I know. We've both talked about it, and she's okay with me telling you that, guys, I have received the highest milestone a YouTuber can receive. A girlfriend! Who I will be calling for the remainder of this video, GIF. That's right, I have a girlfriend now, so you can stop asking if I'm into guys. I mean, I guess I could still technically be into guys, but please stop asking. Dang, I got muscles and a girlfriend now? Man, even I'm jealous of myself. Now, to get the elephant in the room out of the way, it's not Jaden, and it never was Jaden. And it's not the elephant either. The elephant broke up with me because I kept calling her an elephant. I know that the internet likes their ships, but let me just say this once and for all. It's not okay to ship real people that have their own lives and relationships off of YouTube. Hopefully this is all obvious and you're as grossed out as much as I am, because some of you don't seem to mind that we're all real people behind the screen and it can be really damaging to our personal lives. So getting things back on track, one day during quarantine, me and my girlfriend were feeling lethargic and a little sad, as one does in quarantine. We had both bought Disneyland annual passes and were planning on going to the park every single day of 2020, but the timing could not have worked out more horribly, and I still don't know if I'm getting a refund. I'm not, aren't I? I had one friend tell me that something he did to cheer up was that him and his GIF drove down to the beach and had a picnic in their car, and they just relaxed and watched the sunset. And I thought that sounded fun and tranquil as shit, so me and my GIF decided that we too were also going to visit the recently opened beach and be tranquil as shit. Obviously, we were going to wear masks and stay 6 feet apart from everyone, including each other. In my head, I was imagining we would just find a secluded area and we would watch the wet, white, watery waves wash westward while wondering what weather we would want. What? So that weekend, we packed up our beach supplies, sandwiches, and our doggies, and we started our hour-long journey to total tranquility. Floof gets very excited whenever she's wearing a leash, and in car rides, she has this energy like, yes, we get to go somewhere! I wonder where we're going! While GIF's dog, who I will be giving the fake name of Floof 2, is more like,
I wonder where we're going.
Our journey started out smoothly, and there were no problems for about 45 minutes. But I wouldn't be making this video if the entire trip was all smooth sailing. All of a sudden, Floof 2 starts going... which, if you own a dog, you know that means things are about to go down. Or rather, things are about to come up, and emotions and cleanliness are about to go down. So Floof 2 threw up all over my GIF's leg and on the car floor. We quickly pulled over before anyone passed out from how bad it smelled, and we used the napkins we packed to wipe everything down. We put the throw-up napkins into a sandwich bag, which now became the throw-up bag. A minor setback, to be sure, but we were still determined to relax and have a good time. But I wouldn't be making this video if the entire trip was smooth sailing, minus dog vomit. As we kept driving, we were all a little tense from the unprompted dog regurgitation, but I had a solution to ease everyone's mood. Since we were on our way to the beach, I played popular beach music like Surfin' USA. But by the time we got to California Girls, Floof 2 started going... and I mean really going, like West Coast representin' going. And Gif put her hands up like, oh, 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 oh! Floof 2 puked 2 times in 1 60-minute trip. That day, we learned that this California girl has unforgettable motion sickness. It's undeniable. I don't want to go into too much detail because I have to draw the details, but let's just say that Gif's hands were pretty full. I held open the throw-up bag and Gif dumped the second round of puke from her hand into the bag. Also, we were out of napkins because we weren't expecting to have to do this 2 times, let alone 1 times. So Gif had to drive the rest of the way with her hand held up like this. We entertained the idea of Floof 1 licking Gif's hand clean, but after some debating, we decided that doing so would be gross. After 2 dog pukes, we finally got to the beach and saw that it was very crowded and most people weren't even wearing masks. I considered throwing the throw-up bag at them, but after some debate, we decided that we still might need the throw-up bag. Fortunately, we didn't have to debate if going in was still a good idea because as we pulled up, a deputy sheriff was closing the front gate. The beach was at full capacity. "Do not lose hope, Biff," said my GIF, "for I shall find a closer spot within a GIF. For looking at my phone, you see, there is a beach within a mile or 3. End of line. So we decided to try another beach, but when we got there, it was already full and blocked off. Maybe if we didn't pull over to clean up dog puke, we would have gotten there in time. But now that I'm thinking about it, it would have been impossible to relax at a beach that was at full capacity in the middle of a pandemic anyways. The good thing about Cali is that the whole edge is a beach, so we could do this all day. I looked on my phone and found another beach 15 minutes away and we headed off. I suggested that we stopped at a Walmart parking lot or something and wash our hands and recoup, but my unnamed GIF was determined to wash her puke-stained hands with the salt water of the Pacific Ocean. We pulled up to the 3rd beach, the parking lot was empty and closed off, but there was still a clean handful of people already there. The beach wasn't even close to capacity, so we could definitely find a secluded enough area and finally relax. And clean up this dog vom like you, dude. If you're wondering if this beach was closed and these people were just ignoring the closed signs, we thought so too. But there are lifeguards out, so I guess the parking lot was just practicing social distancing or something, I don't know. We had to park the car pretty far away from the beach and walk the rest of the way. And as soon as we stepped out of the car, it was Floof 1's turn to wreak havoc and she dropped about half her body weight in poop onto a grass patch. I don't think this day would have been salvageable if I had to catch that in my hands. Speaking of crap, Floof 2 looked like crap and probably wanted to go home. Meanwhile, Floof 1 was still, yeah! I was holding that puppy in, but now we're at our destination!
Could you just...
You're being a lot right now. It wasn't the best car ride, but whatever, let's just not think about it. We're both in our flippy floppies, carrying our towels, sunscreen, and unbagged sandwiches, ready for a nice, relaxing day at the beach, only to walk up and see the worst possible thing that we could have ever seen possibly. No, it wasn't a beached whale or my ex-girlfriend. What we saw was a sign posted at the entrance that was only 3 words long. But those words were no dogs allowed. Floof 1 was the only thing happy in that moment, unbeknownst to her that she was half the reason our trip was ruined.
This sign won't stop me because I can't read!
So, what did we do? Well, we ate our sammies on a bench near a beach with our bitches, and we had nothing to wash it down with since we used our water to wash our hands and we couldn't drink from the ocean like we originally planned. And then we did what we in the business call, give up. We drove back home empty-handed,
Thankfully, both floofs were sacked out from the day, even though they did literally nothing other than push bodily chunks out from both ends. I love both of those dogs, but I'm not bringing them back to the beach ever again. Not like they're allowed, anyways. There's not a happy ending to this story, we were both very upset. But sometimes, our most memorable trips are the ones we spend with people we love. And sometimes, life's a beach. May I have your attention, please? Your attention. Please, may I have some? Please. What if I put up gameplay of Subway Surfer and used a robot voice? Would that keep you stimulated? Wikipedia says that people born between the year 1981 and 1996 are part of a group called Millennials. And I am a 96 baby. Hello, Year of the Rat, what's up? I'm cusping on that millennial Gen Z line, so I can relate to all you Gen Zers, okay? I know what cap means, I know what drip means, and I also don't remember where I was when 9/11 happened. However, Gen Z, there is a difference between us. We're both a generation that grew up on the internet, but you grew up with the internet. We grew up with the internet. The internet didn't used to always look like this. It has metamorphosized a multitude of times. Now, if you talk to an older millennial, they'll tell you the horror stories of the late 90s internet. How the internet used to be paired with your home's landline. And if you don't know what a landline is, good. If you wanted to surf the net at blazing speeds of 7 kilobytes a second, then you couldn't use your telephone at the same time. This was before texting even existed, so if you needed to talk to someone, you had to call them and look up their phone number in that 20-pound weapon known as a phone book, and then if someone else was using the internet, they'd get the pleasure of listening to... Although, if I had to make a sound that represented the entire internet, it would sound exactly like this. I didn't grow up with dial-up, but I did grow up in a time where the internet looked completely different. By the time I was exploring the interwebs, we got speeds up to 1 megabyte per second. So the highest quality video you could stream on YouTube was in 240p, or this big. And it would still buffer. A lot. Gen Z, you weren't there when YouTube had a 5-star scoring system and the subscribe button was yellow and people would put these things all over their videos. You weren't there when the videos were in a 4:3 aspect ratio because that's what TVs looked like. You weren't there when a background for a website would be a never-ending grid of a JPEG and music would play against your will and your cursor would turn into a sparkly wand and... Okay, that's actually pretty cool. Whatever happened to that? And then the person who built the website would go, it's looking pretty good, but you know what this web page really needs? A counter that'll tell you the total number of people who visited. Let me just copy this HTML code I found online. And if you're around my age and you also had unsupervised computer time, then great, you were also there to experience the pre-puberty years of the internet. Try to imagine the internet without social media. No Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or MySpace. Were people back then just not talking about themselves or sharing their opinions online? Were we as a society more connected with the people we knew in the real world? No, of course not. People have been sharing their opinions online since day one. They were just doing it on random message boards. I know it sounds trivial nowadays, but there was once a novelty in being able to type anything you wanted into the computer and then someone else you didn't know would instantaneously respond. Even Neopets, a game targeted to children, had chat rooms and let anyone send unfiltered messages to children. I'm surprised I didn't meet any weirdos. That's one thing that'll never change with the internet. There will always be weirdos online. In fact, most of a weirdo's life is spent behind a computer. I would know. I think people loved sending messages so much that sometimes your friend would send you a message that said,
"You've just been hit by the duck truck. Send this message to 8 of your friends and you'll be as sexy as a truck."
Ignore and you'll be hit by a 16-wheeler. You have 7 days.
And instead of blocking that person, some people would keep the chain going. Hey, I have a quick question. When was the last time you ever had to type a specific website into your address bar?
probably somewhere about 10 years, give or take. You just type in a Y, and then YouTube pops up. You put in a T, you get Twitter, and P gets you picturesofalligators.com. And if you had a specific question you wanted to ask the internet, you just Yahoo it, right? Yahoo? Oh, no, that's not the one you kids are using. You kids are using that new search engine, right? Ask Jeeves? I know there's like four main websites that everyone goes on, but back then, instead of having a social media account, people made their own websites. So there were a bunch of different websites for you to explore. And to help you find those websites, you had a few search engines to pick from. Everyone loves to dunk on Bing for even attempting to be a search engine, but back in the day, Google had some competition. Obviously, I can see why Google ultimately won the search engine battle. Google is a great company, and I would recommend Google to all my peers and coworkers. I love Google! As much as I love the internet, some of the best memories we had on the computer weren't even on the internet, were they? Sometimes the internet would just go down. But did that stop us? Did we go outside? No. We were still able to supply ourselves with hours of entertainment even without an internet. All you had to do was click Start, All Programs, Accessories, Games, and then... Space Cadet Pinball. I guarantee every millennial watching this right now just got hit with a big wave of nostalgia. This game might seem simple because there's only two buttons that you can press, but when you really got into it, this game had a whole lot more going on. Trust me. Space Cadet Pinball was all we had sometimes, and I cherished every second of it. But if you were anything like me growing up, you were also practicing your art skills. And luckily, every computer came pre-installed with a top-of-the-line painting software that every artist needs. Yeah, this program's got everything. There's a line tool, and a bucket tool, and a circle tool. And sometimes when I was really bored, I would make a black rectangle, scribble the freeform selection tool on it, and then blammo! Yeah, I still got it. I just made a masterpiece. And, fun James bonus tip, for some extra self-induced epilepsy, hold down Control-I, which will invert the colors, so your masterpiece will go,
ah, oh my god, oh it hurts to look at!
Hey, looks like you're trying to create a conclusion to this YouTube video. Would you like my help?
No, Clippy. Even when you were around, I never used you. I just liked having you there to keep me company. The internet is still a relatively new invention that is ever changing the way we live. And we have yet to see the full effects of what being connected since birth does to a person. The fact that the accumulation of all human knowledge can now fit in your pocket? That's going to affect your day-to-day life! Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you to get off the internet, touch grass, and live your life to the fullest. Otherwise, I'd be a hypocrite. And unemployed. There's no denying all the positive things that the internet has to offer. But I'm also not going to deny all the negative things that come with instant gratification, too. As technology advances, so too do we advance the amount of time we spend online. The internet can connect us to a million different people and perspectives that we never would have been exposed to before. But it can also expose us to some really nasty people and perspectives. And the only thing we can do about those people is shrug and say, sorry, that's the internet. So, are we, as a society, better off with the internet? I think so. But just, I don't know, just remember to drink water and stretch. Alright, that's the lesson of this video. Go stretch. I'm serious, right now, go touch your toes.
Welcome everyone to this brand new YouTube video. What's good? I have Jaden Animations here.
Hi.
So what we're doing in this drawing collab thing is we are drawing each other's old art. We're giving each other art that we drew as kids, and then the other person has to redraw it in their own style and make it good and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. On Jaden's channel, we did the exact same thing because we had such a fun time doing it. So we're doing it again.
And it's really important you watch both videos.
You won't understand this video unless you watch the other video.
Totally.
So, the picture you sent me was this girl pulling the leash of, like,
20 dogs.
Yeah. I just had a bunch of dog stickers, and I was like, I'm going to draw a picture with these. So I drew a picture around the stickers.
And there's some dogs saying, you can do it, keep trying, pull harder. And then there's like a son who's like, the son's trying to help too.
So I don't know how many hints I should give you, but the dogs aren't talking.
What?
Okay, and then you sent me like these potato head things.
Yeah, this one I drew when I was a very small child. One of these people is supposed to be someone. I'll tell you who it is after you're done drawing it.
Can I guess?
Sure, guess.
Is it, I don't know, your sister?
You're never going to guess. I don't think you're going to guess in a million years. And it's funny because I know exactly who it is because that's how I would draw that person.
Because it's so accurate. I remember that brand. It was just like dogs. And their thing was having dog pictures with the dog's head being really big. They had stuffed animal dogs as Happy Meal toys at McDonald's. And I had a gray one named Fluffy.
Like from Harry Potter?
See, I don't get that reference, and you know that.
The girl's not talking, and it's like, well, who else could it be, Jaden?
I don't know.
Wait, I think I got it. Those are clouds we're pulling.
Yeah. You gave this one a lot of teeth.
That one's supposed to be a thing, too. Do you want me to give you a clue?
Sure.
It's an animal.
Is it a rabbit? Because it's got bunny ears.
No.
It's really creepy.
Those pictures were when I was very little. I want to say it was like before kindergarten.
The other one that's a person. My mind immediately went to celebrities. Is this Britney Spears?
It's a fictional person. See, even if I told you, I don't, like, you haven't seen that many stuff, so you might be like, I've never seen that. And I'll be like, well, there you go.
That's why you couldn't draw it. Otherwise, you would totally know because it's so accurate.
I used to have my own journal, like a journal where I'd write down like how I felt and everything.
Really?
One time my younger sister went through the journal, and so I threw it away because I didn't want anyone else to read it. And now I'm so upset because I'm like, I could have made a video on it.
Yeah. I tried to have a journal. It was because I was inspired by Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Nice.
So it was totally a ripoff of Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
That he didn't invent journals.
So many teeth. This is horrifying. The way his, like, mouth curls up.
I was very little. I hope this doesn't turn out bad.
That's what I say with everything I do. There's not much to these characters here. And she's got spaghetti hair.
Okay, here's another clue. It's from an anime.
It's Sailor Moon, isn't it?
How'd you get that? How'd you get Sailor Moon with that?
The famous Sailor Moon spaghetti hairs. Insert the theme song right now.
Jupiter, Sailor Mercury, Sailor Mars. Jupiter, Sailor Mercury.
Now that I know that she's Sailor Moon, I can add some details that you left out. I never watched Sailor Moon, so I don't know what she looks like.
Just like get a reference.
No, that's cheating. My interpretation of 6-year-old James's interpretation of Sailor Moon. So it's like triple telephone. What's a show that you watched but didn't enjoy?
Sword Art Online. Do you remember that meme that was like a comic of a poorly drawn guy going like, hey, do you see that guy over there? And then it shows someone waving and then it's like, he thinks such and such and then they hate him. Remember that?
Yeah.
The original version of that comic was, hey, you see that guy over there? He thinks Sword Art Online is a good anime.
So wait, is the other guy like a villain in Sailor Moon?
You think he looks like a villain?
Yes. He's brown.
I don't know, just saying like, yeah, they're evil, they're brown. That's not something.
No, I didn't. Would you get a motorcycle?
I'd have to think about it, but then I'd probably be like, nah.
So, no?
It would be a hard no. You know what I just realized? So I didn't watch the Powerpuff Girls because I thought it was like a girly TV show. Man, I don't want, like, I watch Yu-Gi-Oh! And stuff. But then I watched Sailor Moon, though, so...
I'd say it's arguably more girly.
Yeah.
I remember having, like, a little sign for doors. Girls rule, and then the other side was boys rule.
Fair enough. What about that song? Girls go to Jupiter to get more stupider. I stopped singing because I remembered there was, like, an inappropriate, non-advertiser-friendly part. They go to Venus to get a...
Is her headband red or blue?
It's, do you want me to say? Why did you draw this?
I had stickers.
had stickers.
You know, the best media of art.
I'm still surprised you got Sailor Moon.
I mean, give yourself some credit here. I can't believe I didn't get it sooner.
There was this other anime that I used to watch as a kid. It was called Ray Earth. One of the girls, like, she was all red, another one was blue, and another one was green.
Isn't that Powerpuff Girls?
You know, but it's anime Powerpuff Girls.
Is this a kangaroo?
Do you want me to say what it is?
Yes.
It's supposed to be a bat.
Oh, I didn't draw a bat.
There's like two dots on all the clouds, two red dots, and I think those are supposed to be eyes. Now they look evil. All right, so here is the redraw.
Look at all those. I like it a lot, actually. That's spot on. And then there's mine.
Sailor Moon.
She had no arms and legs, so she's just sitting there.
But she did have arms and legs, the little noodle legs. No, like those two lines are supposed to be the...
Oh, see, I thought that was just like her body.
No.
Don't be silly, Jaden. Next one?
Next one. This one that you drew, there's some like bird monsters waiting for a bus. The bus is a turtle.
The file you sent me is labeled... I'm sorry, Jaden.
I think I made a video about that picture. It was a picture that was made in a book. You know those books you make in elementary school?
The answer key is in that video.
Yep.
I remember that the red guys are the good guys, and the yellow, yep, orange, and purple guys are bad.
Whenever you're drawing in front of someone, and they always are like, I can only draw stick figures, and it's like, cool.
We got a comedian over here.
What are these guys waiting for a bus stop for?
I know, right? That's the main flaw in making them a bird. This gun is bigger than this guy's entire body.
Yep.
I don't know how to draw guns, so I'm just gonna use your reference image.
I was gonna say, neither did I. That picture's funny with the context of everyone in my class was talking about how they would make the world a better place.
Yeah.
You have kids talking about cleaning up the library, reading books to the homeless or whatever. And I'm like, I'd kill people.
You can thank me later.
Okay, there was this one, like, assignment for school. It was an elementary school assignment. You had to, like, write what you wanted for Christmas, but it wasn't supposed to be, like, a materialistic toy thing. It was supposed to be, like, what I want for Christmas is warm smiles with my family and an open fire and blah, blah, blah. I didn't understand it the first time, so I was like, what I want for Christmas is a Power Ranger and I want blah, blah, blah. Then the teacher was like, no, you have to ask for things that you don't normally ask for. And I'm like, oh... And so then the second time I asked for a clap on, clap off thing, you know, because I saw a commercial for it and I'm like,
clap on, clap off.
That looks cool. And so then the teacher was like, no, you still don't understand.
I'm just going to fail you now.
Should I get an Instagram?
You've already got an Instagram. What are you talking about?
You're right.
You've got multiple Instagrams. If you could get any pet right now, what would you get?
A rat.
Do you want to go that route?
So I was thinking about making this its own video, but first I wanted the subjects of the video to like me. That sounds weird. You already know what's happening, but I bought rats. Their names are Peach and Daisy, like in Mario. And Peach... needs a little more getting used to.
She needs some extra attention.
You bite the peach bites back.
Peach likes to bite people. Daisy's cool, though.
This alligator, I just realized, has, like, six legs.
One of them might be a hand, I don't know. Or his tail.
So he has five legs.
I can almost be done.
Oh, no.
Like, it depends on how detailed I want the background to be.
You want it really detailed. These guys are, like, burning to a crisp, being grabbed by the sun.
So you drew the sun, like, doing stuff, and I drew the sun doing stuff, and...
My son was not burning things. He was helping walk a dog.
I'm making the world a better place, okay? Getting rid of all of those horrible orange, purple, and yellow people.
Okay, yeah, freaking yellow people.
I made an Asian joke in my last video.
Did you get any comments about it?
No, actually. They were commenting that I got this one math equation wrong. That's what everyone was commenting about. Boom.
Are you done?
I could make it better.
Yeah, do that.
One of the nicest comments I think I ever got was someone said that it took them 15 minutes to watch a video because I kept pausing and looking at the pictures. And I was like, oh, everything I do is worth it. I don't want to brag, but I've gotten better at Tetris, okay? I look back at that old video of mine and I'm like, ooh, I could do better.
You could pull it up right now since you're done.
So I got into Tetris because there's this one YouTube channel back in the day called The Irate Gamer. And he made a video about Tetris.
and being like, oh, Tetris is so fun, it's so addicting. And I was like, really? It's that awesome? So then I just went up and I started playing, and I'm like, it is fun. And then I
never stopped. For anyone wanting to get into Tetris, what's the advice?
You can't get into it. It's you know, only pros like me can play. I was playing Tetris with someone. This is probably, you're probably not gonna like get the same enjoyment out of this story as I did. But I was playing Tetris and they were like, oh, I see your strategy. You're putting all the pieces to one side so then you can get a Tetris. And I'm like, strategy? That's just how you play the game.
I'm almost done coloring this gun.
Cool.
Which is something I've never said before. I remember finding my old Christmas lists while also looking for these old drawings. For like 3 years in a row, I wished for the world to have world peace.
Did you even know like the like all the war and stuff that was going on when you were a kid?
No, you just like say it. It's like world peace. I don't know what Iraq is.
I just need to get one more line. Right there. Hey.
Hey. I finished drawing your war.
My war? There we go. This is what I drew.
Aw. Look at him. I drew your... It's sloppy, but...
Look at the gun. The gun that shoots three bullets. It's beautiful.
We asked this before, but what have we learned?
We learned how long it takes to draw things. Sweet. Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out Jaden's video on her channel. We did the same thing. Cool. Thanks for watching.
And wear your seatbelt.
Did you know that 99% of everything I've ever said on this channel has been written out ahead of time, including the mispronunciation of the word percent? It would be 100% scripted, but, you know, the drawing challenge videos, you can't really script that kind of content, so... Or can you? But every other video has had a script, and that includes the worst video I've ever made, my very first one.
So you know those books you make in LA?
I'm gonna stop it right there because I physically cannot watch another nanosecond of my first video. I want to take it down so bad, but I'm keeping it up so you can see how much I've improved. Because like it or not, the very first thing you make of something is going to be bad. But you have to make the bad thing first so you know how to make things good. The point is, even that sad excuse of a video was scripted. And today, I want to talk about what goes on in the script writing process and how I get inspiration and some tips for writing better scripts. Because if I write something I'm not 100% happy with, then I'm stuck working on a crappy video for the next month. Like this one. People often tell me, oh, I want to make YouTube videos, but my life's super boring. I wish I could have an exciting life like yours. And I always respond with, my most popular series is about me talking about working at a minimum wage small local sandwich shop. A script does not need to be an edge of your seat, high stakes level story. It needs to be an entertaining story. And I believe if told in a certain way, any story can be an entertaining story. The first piece of advice that I can give that will immediately improve...